2 Samuel chapter 7. And while you're finding that text, I want to remind you of a few things that we studied last week. Grady, would you close that door? Oh, yes, sir, the Sunday school door. I think I was correct in positing the Adamic covenant first, then secondly the Edenic covenant, thirdly the Noahic, fourthly the Abrahamic, fifthly the Mosaic, sixth the Palestinian covenant, which we shall talk about a little bit today, and then seventh the Davidic, all of which are related to the new covenant. Now that's the dispensational scheme of covenants. I will give you information later on about which particular dispensations each of these covenants introduces. For instance, the Adamic covenant between God and Adam in the Garden of Eden was preparatory to the dispensation of innocence. Thank you, Nick. The word innocence being obvious because it relates to the state of Adam before his fall. And as we talked about moving this way on the timeline, the dispensation of innocence lasted until that time that Adam and Eve sinned, in which time God inaugurated the Edenic covenant between himself and Adamic posterity in the Garden of Eden. And we shall fill in these gaps a little bit later on. But right now we're talking about the nature and essence of the covenants themselves. And you may ask, why is that important? Well, it's important for two reasons. One, to understand what are the foundational ideas of dispensationalism. You can't understand dispensationalism unless you understand how dispensationalism is tethered to, very tightly tied to, the covenants. But it's important for a second and greater reason, which is that God is indeed a covenant God, and these covenants are indeed covenants in the Bible. And if they are improperly understood by dispensationalists, then what is the proper meaning of these covenants? And that's what I'm attempting to do by delineating these covenants for you, to talk about, A, their relationship to dispensationalism, and B, their relationship to the revealed truth of God. And let me say a word here. I've thought a lot about whether or not I should teach a series on eschatology, and the response I'm getting from you is that you're interested in that, that you're benefiting from it. But for instance, this morning, Juhi called, and she and Young have car problems and can't be here. They were my greatest concern in preparation for this series, because they don't, at least certainly Young does not, know the Lord. Juhi has made a profession of faith, but they're so young in the Lord. And this is very complex. I think it's complex for some of us. And I know it's complex for them, particularly given the language barrier. But this is a very important topic because, one, it is seriously misunderstood in the public at large, and two, it does relate to the person and work of Christ. That's what's important about it, that it relates to the person and work of Christ. So we ought to know as much as we can about prophecy as it relates to the person and work of Jesus. Now, a disclaimer, which I will make over and over again, is I do not understand everything. But I do understand some things, and that's what I'm doing my best to share with you. Now, today we're going to move on to a discussion of the Palestinian covenant. And as we do that, let me remind you of a couple of pictures I painted last week on the marker board to hopefully help you see visually and more clearly what these covenants mean. If you recall, the Edenic or rather the Adamic dispensation had a limit. Whereas the Edenic dispensation, based on the Proto-Evangelion, the first prophecy of Christ, Genesis 3:15, does not have a limit. In other words, the chronology of the Adamic covenant and the Age of Innocence is solid and complete once Adam and Eve sin. But when God says in Eden that He will raise up the seed of woman, that is not a temporal covenant, as is the Adamic covenant, temporal in that it lasted only until Adam and Eve sinned. But the Edenic covenant is an eternal covenant. As we shall see, the Noahic covenant is a temporal covenant having to do with human government after the destruction of the world by flood, and particularly the confusion of tongues at Babylon, and thus the dissemination of languages into nations, and the inauguration of capital punishment. Then thirdly, fourthly, the Abrahamic covenant, which also is eternal, unless, and this would be arguable by some dispensationalist scholars, but I think dispensationalism says the Abrahamic covenant is temporal, lasting only 1,000 years in the millennium. Whereas I think the Bible teaches that the Abrahamic covenant is eternal, because the seed is not the physical, political, geographical, ethnic people, Israel, but the spiritual people, spiritual Israel, whose destiny is not temporal in an earthly millennium, but whose destiny is eternal in a heavenly kingdom. The Mosaic covenant is also temporal, except in one sense, and that is in the sense of its moral precepts. And this is what the book Hebrews is about. The sacrifices were temporal. The priesthood was temporal. The tabernacle was temporal. And if we think about what Israel was, if we can represent Israel by this green circle, national, political, geographical, physical, ethnic Israel, the central aspect of their identity lay in the tabernacle, particularly the Holy of Holies and the Ark of the Covenant. Even when they camped all round about the holy place. Now, the book of Hebrews came along and said to converted Israelis that this central aspect of their identity, the Ark of the Covenant, the Holy of Holies, the tabernacle, all the furniture in the tabernacle, were shadows. In fact, the writer of Hebrews uses that very word, that they were shadows of heavenly things. In fact, he said all the priests that circulated around here doing their work, they were only shadows of a higher reality. My argument is, and I think you can also validate this argument in the book Hebrews chapter 2, where the writer says that Christ, by the grace of God, tasted death for every, anthropos is not in the Greek, not every man, but if you look at the context, he tasted death for every one of the seed of Abraham, which argues powerfully for a particular atonement, and powerfully against the seed of Abraham being Israel. Here's my point. In the same way that the tabernacle, priesthood, and offerings were shadows, so also I believe that this without and surrounding the worship of Israel was also a shadow. That Israel herself foreshadowed a higher reality, the true elect of God. So in that sense, stay with me, the Mosaic Covenant and its prescription for a tabernacle. Didn't God give Moses the tabernacle in the mount? Its prescription for the offerings. God gave that to Moses in the mount. Its prescription for a priesthood. God gave that to Moses in the mount. The writer of Hebrews says those were only shadows to point us to Christ. And those shadows have disappeared when the sun has risen noonday. But stay with me. The moral precepts of the Mosaic Covenant are eternal. The ceremonial aspects of the Mosaic Covenant, tabernacle, priesthood, and offerings, are temporal. The moral aspects are eternal. You can also argue that the penal aspects of the Mosaic Covenant are eternal as well. Penal meaning the penalties which the law demanded of lawbreakers. If you shed man's blood, by man's hands your blood shall be shed. Now, if a homosexual lies with a homosexual, he may not be executed by the civil magistrates of our society, but the law of God will not bend in eternity. You see? A liar may lie for a lifetime and live. But in eternity, the law of God is, as theologians say, inexorable. Sinai was not made of granite merely for a topographical reason. It has typological significance as well. I never thought of that before. It's hard, unbending, unscalable. Now, let's think a minute about the Mosaic Covenant in relation to dispensationalism, and particularly the book of Hebrews. I think there are about three or four places in the Bible where dispensationalism falls to ashes. And right now, I really want to write a book on this subject. I've got this general title called Dispensationalism Described, Dissected, and Destroyed. And I believe it is crumbling today. And I believe it should. But there are about three or four passages where it is totally destroyed. All of which I'm going to show you later. In fact, it was so easily destructible in one passage that when they made the new Scofield Bible, they took out Mr. Scofield's old notes on the passage, for it was so damning to their position. Dispensationalism argues that the ceremonial aspects of the Mosaic Law, you understand the Law of Moses has moral precepts, thou shalt not. Penal precepts. If you do what I said don't do, if you don't do what I said do, you'll be penalized, you'll be punished. And then it has ceremonial aspects. The ceremonial aspects were necessary because God knew humanity could not live up to His standards. Therefore, He created a tabernacle, a priesthood, and sacrificial offerings to show the people that salvation from the penalty of law came by the shedding of blood. Dispensationalism argues that way over here, after the second coming, in the 1,000-year reign of Christ, what will happen to the ceremonial aspects of the law? Can someone tell us?
In dispensation, they'll be reinstituted.
Okay. That the priesthood of Aaron will be reinvested with priestly authority during the millennium. That the sacrifices of Israel will be re-inaugurated, and that the temple and tabernacle will be re-erected.
Has Christ sitting on the throne at this point, observing?
Yes. and national Israel is all around him in the city of Jerusalem. And therefore, you have these archaeological scholars who are obsessed with finding the Ark of the Covenant because it must be discovered in order to re-centralize worship in national Israel during the millennial reign of Christ. Well, let me show you a passage in Hebrews. Calvinists usually don't like the word world. So I'll show you a usage of the word world. It's an unfortunate translation. Turn to Hebrews chapter 12. And Paul, would you please, I can find my Crudas Concordance. Oh, wait a moment. Would you get my Strong's Concordance off my bookshelf, please, and look up the word world in Hebrews. Now, look at Hebrews chapter 12. Well, let me show you. Let's think a minute about the book Hebrews. To me, and I've used this quote many times, Hebrews is the Waterloo of dispensationalism. It is the Waterloo of dispensationalism. Because what is the writer of Hebrews trying to accomplish? He is trying to convince ethnic Jews who have been converted to Christianity that the old ideas of the Mosaic Covenant are irrelevant. Not in a moral sense, but in a ceremonial sense. And so if you look at what happens in the book of Hebrews, as the writer of Hebrews unveils what the Old Testament really meant in the law of Moses, here's what he does. He says, the lesser priesthood of Aaron pointed to Christ. The lesser tabernacle pointed to Christ. The lesser sacrifices pointed to Christ. Thank you, sir. I'm going to look up one verse and be sure I'm correct. Yes. Hold on. He concludes his argument in Hebrews chapter 12. When he's summing up everything, this is what preachers do. They get to the end of their sermon. They say, well, now let me summarize. He sums up the whole book in a metaphor. And it is the metaphor of a city and a mountain. Now, imagine if the writer of Hebrews, whoever he was, and he was not Paul, I'm almost absolutely certain, if he were here with us and you were new converts to Christianity, you were ethnic Jews, imagine yourself to be an ethnic Jew, and you have been arguing for a more Judaistic flavor to your religion, to your new Christianity, and the writer says to you, let me put it to you in a metaphor, okay? You used to want to go to physical Jerusalem to worship. You used to want to bring your sacrifices to the physical priests and the physical tabernacle to worship because you believe that's what true worship was. Think about the woman of Samaria. God is spirit. And the writer of Hebrews says, you, in your covenant relation to God, have not come to the earthly Jerusalem. You have not come to the earthly Zion. You have come to the heavenly Jerusalem. That's where you live. you have come to the heavenly Zion. Now look at chapter 12. Study it for yourself. Verses 18 following. You're not come to the physical aspects of the covenant. Verse 22. You've come to Mount Zion. You've come to the city of the living God. The heavenly Jerusalem. If you go back to Galatians chapter 4 and chapter 3, where Paul is arguing with those Galatian Judaizers, he says, it's Jerusalem who is above, who is our mother, who is the covenant of grace. Now, Hebrews says, let us never go back to shadows. Dispensationalism says, let us hasten to the shadows. Yea, let us make the shadows concrete in the millennium. Let us de-inaugurate the priest after the order of Melchizedek, Christ, and re-inaugurate the priest after the order of Aaron. Let us de-inaugurate the sufficiency and efficacy of the sacrifice of the greater lamb and re-inaugurate the inefficiency and inefficacy of the lesser lambs, goats, doves, and pigeons. Let us not worship at the temple of his body, but let us worship at the shadowy temple of Solomon and the tabernacle of Moses. Now, they wouldn't say it in such facetious and essentially critical tones, but that's what they teach. As I say, Dallas Theological is backtracking on that old dispensationalism as if it were a tainted leper. They can't get away from their history. Now, how are we doing on time, Nicholas or Paul? 10:25. Well, I think we'll stop. Okay, and I'll open the floor for questions and conversation. Scholarship. I think to some extent a revival of Calvinism. And certainly, there are no reputable scholars at any major theological institution in the world that embrace dispensationalism, except right down here at DTS. The scholarly community has not historically embraced dispensationalism ever. You can find pockets. I'll give you an example. And I really wouldn't classify the General Association of Regular Baptists as a scholarly community. They are good folks. They have a school and a seminary. But in terms of dynamic biblical scholarship, I think it's medium. But their school in Grand Rapids is dispensational, as is their doctrinal statement. Mid-America Baptist Seminary, where I attended, is dispensational. Dallas Theological Seminary is dispensational, and John MacArthur's Master's College is dispensational. Criswell College is. So there are about five, but if you go into the language departments at places which retain an evangelical perspective, such as Westminster Seminary in Philadelphia or Southwestern right here in Fort Worth, I don't think you'll find the language scholars in particular who are dispensationalists. Bruce, you had a... Why are they backtracking? I think because some people over there have seen how ludicrous it is.
I know that's enough.
Where did he attend seminary?
I don't know.
I would say ignorance and a closed mind. I don't mind someone embracing dispensationalism if they're willing to discuss the issue. But many people whom I have encountered, particularly non-scholarly proponents of dispensationalism, hold on to it because it's all they've ever heard, and they really haven't studied the issue for themselves. Yeah, there really is.
What's gonna
yeah, that's a good point.
And having that security.
Pretty confident.
We all, I think, we think every day, wouldn't it be nice if this man was more Christian?
Mm-hmm.
So they have that.
Well, they have it in the millennium beyond the rapture and the tribulation. That's true. They do. They do. I think evangelical society is brainwashed. Really, really brainwashed about this because of the influence of the Scofield Bible and the popularization of dispensationalism through Hal Lindsey's work, The Late Great Planet Earth. And if I may add another reason, I think it's popular because it is such a bedfellow for Arminian evangelism. I don't know how many people have been converted in revival invitations through sermons on the second coming and the rapture and the great tribulation. And I see dispensationalism as a very comfortable bedfellow with Arminian evangelism. And so if you look at the context of contemporary Christianity and see where it is in relation to Arminianism and evangelism, dispensationalism slides right in there as a ready tool for that methodology. It fits. It works. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 90% of people who talk about prophecy can't pronounce the book. It's not Revelations, it's Revelation. Yes. I'm really worried about that. When I see Pat Roberts, his question is, do you think there are congressmen or senators in Washington, D.C. whose ear dispensationalists have? And I am afraid that is true. Anytime I see someone like, and I like Ralph Reed a whole bunch, of all the leaders of the Christian political community, he's my favorite. I hope he is successful. Yes, the Christian Coalition. He is such a blessing, so articulate and cool. But when I see him, not knowing what his position is, or worse, when I see someone like Pat Robertson, whose position I do know, or Jerry Falwell, whose position I do know, standing in a photograph of Bob Dole, or watching world events with senators or congressmen, it worries me. When I understand their eschatology about the millennium, the tribulation, the Antichrist, and so forth, and what influence they might have upon national politics. Yeah, that's a scary question, Bruce. Oh, yeah, that's going to be the total argument against my position, that it spiritualizes. And I admit readily that it does. But the way I answer...
Christ did that on the cross?
The way I answer that is by changing their vocabulary. And it's not a question of spiritual versus physical. I think it's a question about what is literal. see? You'll see this in Dr. Whitelaw's book as we begin to work through that. Is the spiritual sphere as literal as the physical sphere? That's the operative question for me about how you interpret these things. And is spiritual Israel as literal, you see, as physical Israel is literal? So, my argument would be that I do not deny the literal interpretation of Revelation. I deny the physical interpretation of Revelation. To me, this is the literal interpretation of Revelation. And that is hard to grasp. We by nature don't think transcendently. We by nature are not spiritual. Remember, Paul said, God has made us able ministers of the new covenant, not of the letter, but of the what? Of the Spirit, comparing spiritual things with spiritual. And this is one reason why I think these ideas are so hard to grasp, because they do transcend physical realities. That's part of the fear factor, I think, Nick, when you lose the facticity, the certainty of the future. And you lose the, you know, it's real easy to watch world events and see F-15s buzzing around Saudi Arabia. Or see tanks shooting forth laser-guided projectiles and exploding in flamboyant light. And say, oh, in Revelation, these are the chariots of iron who belts fire out of their mouths. Well, you missed me on that one. What do you mean?
You ever read New Gloucester's book about Charles Fess?
No, sir. No, sir.
One of Charles Fess's followers was in New Gloucester's office with the Bible.
Oh, in Revelation.
How he said that's a thought the Beatles for the four horses.
Right. I know a Calvinistic preacher who thinks that.
Stingers in their tails.
I know a Calvinist dispensationalist who thinks that also, that the Beatles were prophesied in the book of Revelation. Yes. The rock and roll band, the Beatles. Mm-hmm. Uh-oh. We scratched Paul here. Let me say a closing word. Nobody has to agree with me about prophecy to be a member of this church. And I'm saying things about dispensation. Some of you historically have embraced dispensationalism, and I do not want to sound offensive. I do feel passionately about this. But if in any way in tone or content I offend anyone, that you please tell me, because I don't want to be offensive about it. But I would like for you to think about it and feel that you have a degree of understanding, better understanding about this. Well, the Lord willing, next week we will talk about the Davidic covenant and another Waterloo passage for dispensationalism. Study the book of Hebrews. It is absolutely awesome.